plate a potential nugget.
And just moving to a different theme of, another piece of work that MGI has published, which is about the future of work. I'm curious about the so what from an individual standpoint, specifically how do we navigate the future of work. So maybe to start, what are the big takeaways in terms of how the future of work is going to be very different from today? And secondly, therefore, what does it mean for the individual that sort of in the workplace of today to be future ready?
I think the nature and shape of work is going to change very dramatically, right? If we, based on a lot of work that MGI has done on this topic globally, I can definitely say that we have a good understanding of what technology is capable of today. Mm-hmm. But despite that, I think we, like everybody else, is constantly surprised at the pace at which these technology capabilities are advancing. Mm-hmm. So just in the realm of, AI and automation, the kind of very human-like capabilities, whether it's, Google's AlphaGo program that beat a world master Go player in a game that is not mechanical but actually demands a lot of creativity and intuition. Or the way, face recognition or speech recognition technology is beating the best human experts at this. Not just beating them by far, but doing so in a manner which is very learning oriented. So these are programs that are learning constantly and improving. So the whole nature of what these, AI and automation technologies are able to do is...
It's not a static comparative advantage.
It's not a static,
something that's going to get steeper and steeper.
Exactly. So given that, if you map those technology capabilities against the capabilities that we as workers are using in our jobs, in our occupations, we use a mix of technologies. I use, physical dexterity. I use sensing capabilities. Sure. I use emotional capabilities. I use logical reasoning capabilities. A whole spectrum of different capabilities. Yeah. So our research actually maps what are the best available technological capabilities today and to what extent they fulfill, are they already at top quartile performance level for, let's say, fine motor skills? Or are today's technologies at top quartile level for emotional and, more
in terms of machines versus humans?
Wow. So if you map that, you actually come up with this really startling conclusion. First of all, it's not about jobs. It's about parts of a job.
Correct.
So not all of my work can get automated, but parts of it certainly can. And if you look at the way we as a workforce around the world spend our time using these capabilities and compare that with technology, we find that 50 to 55% or maybe 45 to 55%, something in a band like that, is the technical automation capacity that already exists in the world today. But it doesn't mean that all of this will get automated because
economic
feasibility,
cost,
et cetera, et cetera. So in reality, you might not see adoption rising that steeply. But it's a very sobering thought to say that a lot of what you do is actually, could be substituted. And the things that can be less easily substituted are the more creative aspects of, the work that we do. The new pattern recognition. So not sort of recognizing an established pattern. I think machines can do that much better. But it's sort of finding new patterns, right, where they did not exist earlier. Also, the whole interaction, the leadership, managing other people. So more emotional and sensing types of skills.
Right.
And what is really interesting is that the education system is not oriented to creative skills. It is not oriented to emotional and sensing or interpersonal or leadership skills. We are still even we who pride ourselves on being, maybe an education system that encourages math and science and STEM skills. But if you really look, are you really teaching problem solving skills, which involve these kinds of things to your kids? Or are you still, doing STEM in a very mechanical way? And I would say that the education system is just not ready for this. And therefore, I think the advice to both organizations as well as, frankly, parents who are raising children is that the more we are going to challenge our workforce and encourage environments in which you can think more creatively and more openly, I think that is the only way of really future-proofing yourself. So this is one big bucket of the future of work. I think the other really interesting dynamic playing out from our research is this whole, we think about flexibility as, you know, maybe like for women, this is important or whatever. But the reality is that there is a whole generation of younger people who want to be independent, autonomous and flexible workers. A lot of them, we did some surveys in the US and Europe, a lot of them, up to 70% of them actually want to do this by choice. So this is not that I'm forced to be in a flexible work model because I don't have a formal job offer, but 70% of them value the flexibility that comes from being an autonomous worker of some kind. So if that is the case, then and as an organization, you have to figure out that this is what people want.
And how do you engage with that?
Yeah, the old org structure of, you know, a bunch of full-time workers dedicated to one. You put the two things together. People are going to have to be more creative and flexible, but they're also going to want to work in a more autonomous, slivered, you know, different. So you need to create an organization that actually allows that to happen.
Back in the future of the firm, right? In a way, the it's interesting. Actually, I was talking to another leader, Ravi Venkatesan, in a different context. And the question I asked him, I remember, was, you know, we're living in a world with reduced transaction costs between organizations given technology and platforms. So what does it mean in terms of the future of the organization? But his point was, in such an ecosystem, trust becomes more important. And, you know, and the pendulum will swing back, because the reason organizations exist is because you have a certain hiring standard, people belong to a certain work ethic,
blah, blah, blah,
and that signals something. And sort of there's a certain sort of minimal friction when people within an organization work. But when ecosystems start working together, there's going to be more friction.
There's going to be more friction and dissonance of different styles.
It's fascinating to see how the world we are moving to requires us to engage in second-order thinking in almost everything. The world of recruiting is moving from looking just at competencies to paying greater attention to intrinsic drivers of potential and motivation. The world of education is moving from teaching things to sparking curiosity and equipping the kids with the ability of learning to learn. The thinking around leadership is clearly shifting from getting things done through people in a reasonably direct way to creating the right climatic conditions as a leader for others to come and engage on the platform and contribute. These are interesting times indeed. Thank you for listening. For more, please visit playtopotential.com. And if you want to listen offline, you could look for the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or one of the other podcast apps.